Chapter 99. More composure came to me after a while, and we talked as we used to talk, lying on the grass at the old battery. There was no change whatever in Joe. Exactly what he had been in my eyes then, he was in my eyes still, just as simply faithful, and as simply right. When we got back again, and he lifted me out, and carried me so easily across the court, and up the stairs, I thought of that eventful Christmas day, when he had carried me over the marshes. We had not yet made any allusion to my change of fortune, nor did I know how much of my late history he was acquainted with. I was so doubtful of myself now, and put so much trust in him, that I could not satisfy myself, whether I ought to refer to it when he did not. "Have you heard, Joe?" I asked him that evening, upon further consideration, as he smoked his pipe at the window, who my patron was. "I heard," returned Joe, "as it were not Miss Havisham, old chap." "Did you hear who it was, Joe?" "Well, I heard as it were a person, what sent the person, what give you the banknotes at the Jolly Bargemen, Pip." "So it was." "Astonishing," said Joe, in the placidest way. "Did you hear that he was dead, Joe?" I presently asked, with increasing diffidence.
"Which?
Him as sent the banknotes, Pip?"
"Yes.
I think," said Joe, after meditating a long time, and looking rather evasively at the window seat, "as I did hear tell that, how he were something or another in a general way in that direction." "Did you hear anything of his circumstances, Joe?"
"Not particular, Pip."
"If you would like to hear, Joe," I was beginning, when Joe got up, and came to my sofa. "Look'ee here, old chap," said Joe, bending over me. "Ever the best of friends, ain't us, Pip?" I was ashamed to answer him.
"Worry good, then," said Joe, as if I had answered.
"That's all right, that's agreed upon. Then why go into subjects, old chap, which as betwixt two such must be forever a necessary? There's subjects enough as betwixt two such, without a necessary ones.
Lord! To think of your poor sister and her rampages!
And don't you remember Tickler?"
"I do indeed, Joe."
"Look'ee here, old chap," said Joe. "I done what I could to keep you and Tickler in sunders, but my power were not always fully equal to my inclinations. For when your poor sister had a mind to drop into you, it were not so much," said Joe, in his favorite argumentative way, "that she dropped into me too, if I put myself in opposition to her, but that she dropped into you always heavier for it.
I noticed that. It ain't a grab but a man's whisker, not yet a shake or two of a man, to which your sister was quite welcome, that 'ud put a man off from getting a little child out of punishment. But when that little child is dropped into, heavier, for that grab of whisker or shaking, then that man naturally up, and says to himself, where is the good as you are a doing?
I grant you I see the arm, apostrophe says the man, but I don't see the good.
I call upon you, sir, therefore, to point out the good."
"The man says?" I observed, as Joe waited for me to speak.
"The man says," Joe assented.
"Is he right, that man?"
"Dear Joe, he is always right."
"Well, old chap," said Joe, "then abide by your words. If he's always right, which in general he's more likely wrong, he's right when he says this. Supposing ever you kept any little matter to yourself, when you was a little child, you kept it, mostly because you know it as J. Gargery's power, to part you and Tickler in sunders, were not fully equal to his inclinations. Therefore, think no more of it as betwixt two such, and do not let us pass remarks upon the necessary subjects. Biddy give herself a deal o' trouble with me afore I left, for I am almost awful dull, as I should view it in this light, and, viewing it in this light, as I should so put it. Both of which," said Joe, quite charmed with his logical arrangement, "being done, now this to you a true friend, say. Namely, you mustn't go a overdoing on it, but you must have your supper and your wine and water, and you must be put betwixt the sheets.
the delicacy with which Joe dismissed this theme, and the sweet tact and kindness with which Biddy, who with her woman's wit had found me out so soon had prepared him for it, made a deep impression on my mind. But whether Joe knew how poor I was, and how my great expectations had all dissolved, like our own marsh mists before the sun, I could not understand. Another thing in Joe, that I could not understand when it first began to develop itself, but which I soon arrived at a sorrowful comprehension of, was this. As I became stronger and better, Joe became a little less easy with me. In my weakness and entire dependence on him, the dear fellow had fallen into the old tone, and called me by the old names, the dear old Pip, old chap, that now were music in my ears. I too had fallen into the old ways, only happy and thankful that he let me. But, imperceptibly, though I held by them fast, Joe's hold upon them began to slacken, and whereas I wondered at this, at first, I soon began to understand that the cause of it was in me, and that the fault of it was all mine. Ah! Had I given Joe no reason to doubt my constancy, and to think that in prosperity I should grow cold to him, and cast him off? Had I given Joe's innocent heart no cause to feel instinctively that as I got stronger, his hold upon me would be weaker, and that he had better loosen it in time, and let me go, before I plucked myself away? It was on the third or fourth occasion of my going out walking in the Temple Gardens leaning on Joe's arm, that I saw this change in him very plainly. We had been sitting in the bright warm sunlight, looking at the river, and I chanced to say as we got up, "See, Joe, I can walk quite strongly. Now, you shall see me walk back by myself." "Which do not overdo it, Pip," said Joe, "but I shall be happy fur to see you able, sir." The last word grated on me, but how could I remonstrate? I walked no further than the gate of the gardens, and then pretended to be weaker than I was, and asked Joe for his arm. Joe gave it me, but was thoughtful. I, for my part, was thoughtful too, for how best to check this growing change in Joe was a great perplexity to my remorseful thoughts. That I was ashamed to tell him exactly how I was placed, and what I had come down to, I do not seek to conceal, but I hope my reluctance was not quite an unworthy one. He would want to help me out of his little savings, I knew, and I knew that he ought not to help me, and that I must not suffer him to do it. It was a thoughtful evening with both of us. But, before we went to bed, I had resolved that I would wait over tomorrow, tomorrow being Sunday, and would begin my new course with the new week. On Monday morning I would speak to Joe about this change, I would lay aside this last vestige of reserve, I would tell him what I had in my thoughts that secondly, not yet arrived at, and why I had not decided to go out to Herbert, and then the change would be conquered forever. As I cleared, Joe cleared, and it seemed as though he had sympathetically arrived at a resolution to. We had a quiet day on the Sunday, and we rode out into the country, and then walked in the fields. "I feel thankful that I have been ill, Joe," I said. "Dear old Pip, old chap, your amist come round, sir. It has been a memorable time for me, Joe." "Likewise for myself, sir," Joe returned. "We have had a time together, Joe, that I can never forget. There were days once, I know, that I did for a while forget, but I never shall forget these." "Pip," said Joe, appearing a little hurried and troubled, "there has been larks, and, dear sir, what have been betwixt us have been." At night, when I had gone to bed, Joe came into my room, as he had done all through my recovery. He asked me if I felt sure that I was as well as in the morning. "Yes, dear Joe, quite." "And are always a getting stronger, old chap?" "Yes, dear Joe, steadily." Joe patted the coverlet on my shoulder with his great good hand, and said, in what I thought a husky voice, "Good night." When I got up in the morning, refreshed and stronger yet, I was full of my resolution to tell Joe all, without delay. I would tell him before breakfast. I would dress at once, and go to his room and surprise him, 4. It was the first day I had been up early. I went to his room, and he was not there. Not only was he not there, but his box was gone. I hurried then to the breakfast table, and on it found a letter. These were its brief contents. Not wishful to intrude, I have departured, for you are well again, dear Pip, and will do better without Joe. P.S. Ever the best of friends. Enclosed in the letter was a receipt for the debt and costs on which I had been arrested. Down to that moment I had vainly supposed that my creditor had withdrawn or suspended proceedings until I should be quite recovered. I had never dreamed of Joe's having paid the money, but Joe had paid it, and the receipt was in his name. What remained for me now but to follow him to the dear old forge, and there to have out my disclosure to him, and my penitent remonstrance with him, and there to relieve my mind and heart of that reserved secondly, which had begun as a vague something lingering in my thoughts, and had formed into a settled purpose. The purpose was that I would go to Biddy, that I would show her how humbled and repentant I came back, that I would tell her how I had lost all I once hoped for, that I would remind her of our old confidences in my first unhappy time. Then I would say to her, "Biddy, I think you once liked me very well, when my errant heart, even while it strayed away from you, was quieter and better with you than it ever has been since. If you can like me only half as well once more, if you can take me with all my faults and disappointments on my head, if you can receive me like a forgiven child, and indeed I am as sorry, Biddy, and have as much need of a hushing voice and a soothing hand, I hope I am a little worthier of you, that I was not much, but a little. And, Biddy, it shall rest with you to say whether I shall work at the forge with Joe, or whether I shall try for any different occupation down in this country, or whether we shall go away to a distant place, where an opportunity awaits me, which I set aside when it was offered, until I knew your answer. And now, dear Biddy, if you can tell me that you will go through the world with me, you will surely make it a better world for me, and me a better man for it, and I will try hard to make it a better world for you." Such was my purpose. After 3 days more of recovery, I went down to the old place to put it in execution, and how I sped in it is all I have left to tell. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.